All right. You guys have fun.
Yeah. Bye.
Bonerwood popping out.
That's going to go somewhere.
It's got to. That shit better be in something. Bonerwood popping out.
We have a boner wood, so as the wood turns.
You better watch out because he'll be making a remix of you there, Fester, anytime soon.
Let's put it this way. If it's being recorded and Bo's editing it, everything is fair game.
That's true.
You know, I think I'm the only one that he's actually turned into a full-length song.
So far.
So far.
We have a boner wood.
So far.
So far.
Boner wood popping out.
That's going to go somewhere.
It's got to. So far.
So far.
Better watch out. Better watch out because he'll be making a remix of you there, Fester, anytime soon.
We have a boner wood.
So far.
Boner wood popping out.
That's going to go somewhere.
It's got to.
Boner wood popping out.
Please remember, the views and opinions expressed by this show or any other show on DV Radio and its guests are strictly those of said individuals and do not reflect those of the DV Radio staff, nor the staff of Dysfunctional Veterans.
I'm Nevermore, and I'm not normally this pleasant sounding.
I'm Frosty, and I'm just a frozen asshole.
And that's right, you got DV Oink, who loves to play and shit. I mean, no, wait a minute, hold on.
And they really didn't name y'all Asshole 1 and 2?
That's what the boss calls it.
Two people remember me, and one's both mom.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
We were a little bit soggy.
Boiled bacon.
That's right.
And I'd like to introduce DV Midnight Backdoor for all your backdoor needs.
And you know what that means.
We will talk really slow for you.
I don't know, some of those nights at work.
That fans a different little bird.
Welcome to Frag Out, Drag Out.
Welcome to Frag Out, Drag Out, your Friday, December 6th edition. That's right, Friday, December 6th, Frag Out, Drag Out. With us tonight is, of course, Uncle Fester, my frozen buddy from the north, my brother from another mother. Frosty's with us again today. And special guest, Mr. Joaquin Watsai from PTS Dog. And especially today from Waitai Woodworking. So around the table, how are we doing, fellas?
Doing good. And somebody's actually put me back together, so I ain't all falling apart, unlike that other snowman. No spoilers there.
And Fester, how are you doing today, brother?
Doing pretty good. It's great today.
Yep, we're not actually here on Friday yet, but we're getting there ourselves. So eventually this will air on right here on WDBR DV Radio on December 6th. But right now, it's not. But hey, on to our special guest, of course, Mr. Joaquin Watsai. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing good.
So, in long story short, what we're trying to do for this holiday season is, of course, promote small veteran-owned businesses. Last time we were on, we had, of course, one of our sponsors, K-Bar Soap Company, which obviously Fester fell in love with. I mean, we all love them already anyway, but Fester had a fond attraction with him. Not in that kind of way, but you know what we're talking about. And the reason we have Mr. Joaquin Watsai on here is something a little different, something that he's been experimenting with and putting out some very neat things. And if you haven't liked the page yet, check it out. Waitai Wood Turning, Waitie, Wood Turning, Waitai Wood Turning. And check out some of the great things he's put together. And, you know, one of the questions I have for you there, Joaquin, is what made you want to do a small business of your own? What gave you that driving factor?
Well, I don't really necessarily consider myself to be running a business per se, but I discovered wood turning through the help of a veteran brother named Bob Bender, and he put me in front of a lathe and stuck a bull gouge in my hand, and I felt instantly in love with the art form. I consider myself an artist more than a businessman. The problem was, as I started turning pieces, I have like a big box full of nothing but little, you know, bowls and wooden boxes, you know, all this stuff that I'm turning on the lathe, and there's not enough surface area in my house to put it all. So I decided, why not, you know, try selling it. So I started putting stuff up on the page.
Well, I got to tell you, like I said, some of the stuff that Frosty, myself, I'm sure Fester's checked it out as well. But some of the stuff you actually produce, man, it's unique in itself because you don't use, how would I say, normal wood that you would, you know, a lot of folks you see out there, you know, trying to make stuff perfect. Right. If that's a way.
Yeah.
You use fallen trees and whatnot, right?
Yeah. Almost everything I turn is from found wood. I do a lot of natural edge or live edge turnings, and it seems like they mean the same thing, but a natural edge is the piece of wood and the bark has come off. So it's where the wood ends and the bark begins. So a lot of rims of bowls or there's a couple of pieces I have that have what would appear to be cracks in them, but what it is is where the bark was, but the bark has fallen off. So you have the natural edge. Live edge is when you still have the bark. For example, I'm working on a piece right now made of cherry, and inside of the wood, I started with a big cube of cherry wood that was about 8 by 8 inches by 8 and weighed about 25 pounds. As I got it round and got into the inside of it, I discovered a bark inclusion inside of the wood. You couldn't see it in the cube form. So that would technically be a live edge because the bark is still there. Knock on wood, I can keep the bark in there as I continue to work on this piece. Right now I'm trying to get it dry enough that it will stop. Cherry is really notorious. It cracks and moves. And all this cherry wood that I have happens to be from the joints or crotches where the branches separate out from the main body of the tree. So one of the things that makes this wood incredibly beautiful is the grain goes every which direction. It's not long straight grain at all. It's crazy. Almost burl-like in some spots. So you get just wonderful patterns of grain and really what I try to do is I can't make the wood more beautiful. I just try to show how beautiful the wood is.
Is that the piece there you have on the profile pictures for the
page? No, the most recent piece, it's the rough turn cherry vessel at the top of the page. It's the top post. That's that piece.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. That bark inclusion. I mean, see, that's the thing that I'm trying to do is there are people who say, well, that's not perfect. You know, it's cracked. There's something wrong. I try to take that and include it in the piece rather than, you know, cranking out this perfect, you know, and I'm not saying that I don't make things that are very clean and don't have, you know, inclusions and things like that, because I do. But the natural edge and live edge pieces, I really strive to accent the beauty of the wood rather than try to turn the wood into what I think it should be. I try to bring out what's in there. The piece on the profile picture is a piece of spalted oak, and it's actually heartwood. It's an end turned, which means most bowls are turned from the side, so you're cutting across the long grains. End turned, you're cutting straight down, like, you know, you cut a log and you start digging a hole into the top of it. That's end turning. And that piece was unique because that there's wormholes in it, and you couldn't see it from the outside. It was when I started turning it that I found all these wormholes and stuff. And it turned out I think it's very, very lovely. It's not very big. It's only about 4 inches by 1.5 or 2 inches deep, but it's just the grain in there.
Yeah. It definitely makes it pop and stand out. I mean,
yeah. Yeah. And that just literally, you know, all that is spending some time with the turning tools, with the gouges, and then some time sanding and then, you know, finish. I didn't put any dyes in it or anything like that. Clear finish. I try to let the wood speak for itself.
Do you use shine juice?
Yes, I do use OB shine juice. I love that stuff. OB shine juice is a combination of, it's three parts, one third denatured alcohol, one third boiled linseed oil, and one third shellac. And I've got lacquer. I've got Danish oil. I've got just plain old boiled linseed oil. You know, I've got urethane. Nothing makes it look prettier than shine juice, than OB shine juice. That is just, that's an old recipe that's been around in the woodworking world for a long time from what I can discover. And let me tell you what, that stuff is amazing.
Well, bowl you had for the raffle in July, that was beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
And I've seen some of your other work, and that is, I wish I had that talent. I really do. I, or, you know, have a talent of some sort.
it's, I don't think I'm talented. I think that I just want, I want to touch the wood. I want to take the wood and bring it from something where somebody looks at that and goes, that's just a piece of firewood. It's just, you know, stick. You know, I want to bring out what's underneath the surface and show the grain and show the, you know, some of the pieces that I love the most are the ones that look incredibly rough. But when you pick it up, it's not, it's smooth, you know, it's shiny. It's the natural edges and corners and cracks and just the, where the wood inside, it looks naturally. It's something you don't see unless you spend time working with wood.
And you said earlier that obviously, excuse me, that this wasn't really a business thing initially. Obviously you're trying to sell it to make more room, but I mean, would you consider this also something that is a stress reliever for some, you know,
well, you know, and it
takes your mind off of things.
Yeah. I was just thinking about it because Chris from K-Bar said the same thing. This is my therapy. And absolutely. You know, my buddy, Bob, another veteran, he's a combat veteran, and he said, you need to come out to the shop and I'll put you on the lathe. And I said, why? And he said, just trust me, come out to the shop. So, you know, it's a little more an hour away to get out to Bob's place. And, you know, the first time I went out there, I'm like, I don't know what's going to go on, but at least we'd sit and drink some coffee or whatever. And oh, you know, he puts, gets me out in the shop and he hands me a bowl gouge and starts pointing at this big chunk of cedar. And I'm going, well, okay, what do we do? And he shows me how to mount it on the lathe, and he starts turning it, shows me how to use the tool to start making cuts, hands me the tool. He, you know, he probably turned it about, you know, an eighth of the way he turned a piece. He hands me the tool and says, now you try. And I don't know how to describe it. The instant I touched that tool to the wood, I knew this was something I loved. My stepdad is a wood turner, and I was always fascinated by his pieces and I always wanted to learn it, but you know, for 30 years I never did. And finally my brother sits, you know, hands me a gouge and says, you try. And let me tell you what, man, it went click, and I was absolutely in love with it as just an art form. And the thing that I figured out is that you know, there's a mental health technique, I guess you could call it, called mindfulness, where you try to focus on the here and now and the moment and not let the things like the past and worries about the future and those kind of things overwhelm you. Well, the coolest thing, in my opinion, about wood turning is that what it is mindfulness that's productive. I have no choice when I've got a piece of wood spinning towards me at 1200 RPM. I have no choice but to focus solely on that and nothing else. If I'm distracted, I could end up injured or dead. So you're forced to focus, be in the moment, not let your brain overwhelm you. And at the end of, in a lot of ways, is meditation, you have something to show for it. So I've tried to include that concept in the pieces that I make. I haven't developed my mental discipline so far as to say, well, I'm going to think about this while I make this bowl or anything, you know, pretentious like that, as much as just the idea that, hey, I'm having a rough day. Like last week when I started this cherry bowl, I was this cherry piece. I don't even know what to call it. I was really having a rough day. And I'm like, look, I am absolutely enraged for no reason whatsoever. And, you know, thanks PTSD. And, I need to go do something about it before I take it out on people who don't deserve to have it taken out on them. So I literally told him I'm going to the shop, went out there, fired everything up and started working. And an hour and a half later, when I got to a point where I, you know, I needed to stop, I was calm. I was relaxed. There was no reason for me to be stressing out. It's, you know, it gives my brain the opportunity for all the turmoil and the demons to be quiet, so that I can stay focused. And by the time I'm done, I've forgotten whatever it was that was making me crazy when I went out there to the shop.
Yeah, and you kind of mentioned it too. I mean, obviously, when you got something spinning, you know, it's a 25-pound block of wood or even smaller than that, still spinning at 24, or would you say 1,200 RPM. Mm-hmm. If it came loose, it's going to do some damage. So, yes, it definitely demands – you definitely need to focus on what you're doing.
I will admit, and never more threatened to kill me, but I've had a few pieces bounce off of my face mask, and I do wear PPE because, yes, it's dangerous. And I had a piece that I was working on a week and a half ago, not very big piece, a little bowl, and it had a wing. So it was a long rectangular piece of wood when I started, and I cut a bowl into the middle, and then I was trying to shape the sides into a wing, and it exploded and shot pieces of the wing everywhere. And of course, it's still spinning at 1,800 RPM, and I'm thinking, great, I just destroyed this. And I turned the lathe off, and it had just snapped off the wing parts, and I still had this cool little almost triangular base where the branches intersected at the bottom of the little bowl, and it made it look 100 times better than it did when it had these long, weird, funky wings on it. Sometimes it really is a happy accident. It wasn't intentional, but it turned out making the piece far more attractive than I thought it was.
So do you use carbide tools or do you use high-speed steel?
I use high-speed steel, traditional tools. I do need some carbide hollowing tools. For the most part, everything I do, I can use traditional tools and will use traditional tools. How do I explain this? Carbide tools are great, and they're great for certain functions, but they leave a lot to be desired in regards to technique.
But they're also fragile.
They can be fragile. But I feel that learning the technique, the appropriate technique to use the high-speed steel traditional tools is as much a part of the art as what comes off of the lathe. You can make things that are beautiful, or you can make them beautifully. I'm striving to make things beautifully.
From your pictures, it looks like you're doing both.
I try. And then, because I don't have certain tools, there are things that I can't do right now. My ability has surpassed the tools I have available to me.
Do you only use a four-jaw chuck or back plate or both?
I don't use a chuck. I have a face plate, and because I don't own a chuck, because they aren't cheap, I use jam chuck and glue chuck techniques, which are far predate the chuck. So what I do is I have just a piece of waste wood, a waste block that I attach to my faceplate, turn it round, and I'll either turn a recess into it, a mortise, or I will turn a tenon or spigot on it that the piece that I'm turning would fit into or over. And then this is a technique that isn't that old, but you make it so that it fits really tight, and then you use the handy dandy hot glue gun, and you hot glue it to the waste block. And that the cool thing about hot glue is it doesn't soak into the wood that you're turning, you can clean it off without damaging the piece. But it's strong enough that you can whirl a piece of wood at 1,800 RPM, and it'll hold it. So that's one of the tools that I need to. I'm trying to turn enough pieces and make enough money to buy myself a four-jaw chuck, because with the chuck, not only does it make what I can do more versatile, but it makes it faster. Every time I have to turn a piece around and glue it to the jam chuck, we're talking an extra half an hour's worth of time, because you got to heat the glue, you got to glue the piece to the jam chuck, and then you've got to let it set. So that slows me down a lot. And there are times when I get so frustrated because, you know, I need to go in the house and cook dinner, or it's getting late. You know, I've been out on that lathe until after 11:30, 12 o'clock at night. But this time of year, it's too damn cold to do that. Where if I had a chuck, I could just flip it around, stick it on chuck, bum, 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 right back to work.
Do you use the tailstock for anything? Do you use the tailstock on it?
I turn between centers. I turn most most of the exterior, especially when I have a big oddly shaped piece like the big cube, you have to use a tail center, even if you're using a faceplate, which is screwed into the wood for safety until you get the piece round. And most of the time while you're turning it, especially outside the outside of it, you have to use a tail center. It's just too dangerous. Think about the torque involved with a piece that weighs 15 or 20 pounds, spinning anywhere between 500 and 1800 RPM towards you, but only held on one end. That's a recipe for pain.
Oh yeah. I for 10 years, I worked for a tool company, and that, our biggest lathe that we sold was 36 by 50 that we stored in the store.
That would be amazing.
What would you recommend there, Joaquin, to somebody, you know, that likes dealing with wood and they don't have a close brother, Bob Bender, to come around and teach them some of the beginnings? Where could somebody, obviously besides your typical YouTube videos or whatnot, where can somebody like that actually get started?
Honestly, I have learned so much watching YouTube. There are some there's some turners out there who I'll watch because I like what they make, but their technique makes my skin crawl. And there are some turners out there whose technique is amazing. Their skill is, I mean, there are some people who make videos on YouTube and they are renowned and they are considered to be some of the top of the field. There's a gentleman called the Wyoming Wood Turners. His name is Sam Angelo. And he, I don't know if you guys remember back in the late 80s on Saturday Night Live, they had the anal retentive chef. And Sam Angelo is the anal retentive wood turner. However, because he's so very particular and careful, and he, you know, just, I learned from him. Hush, Boogie, hush. I learned from watching him because he makes sure to go through all those stupid, annoying, meticulous little steps and explain them all. This is why I'm doing this, and this is what happens if I don't, and this is what happens if I do. And that is, it's really, I mean, for me, being able to watch it and then go out to the lathe and try it, I learn, and I learn really fast that way. There's another guy who used to be a high school shop teacher, and then he owned a woodworking shop, school in Texas. And his YouTube channel is called Worth the Effort. And he breaks it down Barney style. I mean, his videos are classes aimed at, you know, 16-year-old kids. So some of the stuff he does is extremely educational, and I've learned a lot from watching it. Some of it's boring because it's like, okay, yes, I realize that you're aimed at talking to kids, but I'm not a kid. But this man makes some beautiful, beautiful things. So it's worth it to see the technique, and he explains the technique. This guy breaks it down to, if you hold the blade at this angle, this is what happens. I mean, he gets down way down into woodworks. And then there's some people who are fun. There's a British maker called Nick Zametti, and he does some wild stuff with resin. But he's quite a talented turner. He does turn wood too, but most of the things he does are with resin. Another is Pole Barn Productions. I watch him, Doug. He does a mixture of wood and resin and just plain, you know, wood turnings. But I really love his creative eye. I'm not a big fan of resin. I like the natural edges. And that's probably one of the wood turners whose technique drives me nuts, but whose pieces are incredible. His name is Phil Anderson. Shady Acres Woodshop is what he calls his channel, I think. And he does natural and live edge pieces. And this man takes the most ugly, just scary looking chunk of wood, and he turns it into a natural edge vase or a natural edge bowl, or a live edge. And I'm still trying to figure out how he keeps the bark on the wood the way he does, because it's incredible. But some of the pieces this man makes are absolutely some of the most beautiful, beautiful things I've ever seen. But at the same time, when I watch him, sometimes I'm yelling at him because his technique is awful.
There's one wood turner I follow on YouTube. It's R. Humphrey.
Yes, that is the other Marine. Inspiration is Rod Humphrey, a Marine veteran, a retired Marine, and he is a lot like Sam Angelo, and I personally think that he is just as talented as Sam Angelo. Rod Humphrey does a lot of woodworking. He turns, and he's got the best, nice, soft, and calm voice as he describes his work. And if I can't get out to the shop and I'm going crazy and I'm, you know, just going nuts, I'll watch Rod Humphrey, another outstanding turner and veteran. And he's, what I like about him is he shows the pieces that his followers do. And there's a couple pieces I might send to him to show, but yeah, I love watching Rod Humphrey. In fact, he hasn't turned out a video in the past couple of weeks, and I'm hoping he's doing okay. He just had shoulder surgery not too long ago.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and hey, speaking of Marines, before we take a break, we can't obviously forget one of our favorite Marines of all times, their Sidewinder and his K-Bar Soap Company. K-Bar Soap Company, the only all-natural soap and beard care option you'll ever need. So ditch the bar, grab it a grenade, and head over to K-Bar Soap Co. and check them out, guys, because they got some awesome deals, and you may still be able to catch the what's the scent there that you picked up here recently there, Fester, that was awesome?
The Gunny Claws.
There you go.
Gunny Claws. Reveille, but I remember the wife snatched my Gunny Claws.
Yeah, we got to try the old napalm in the AM here shortly because, my lather neck is just about up. And, of course, our other sponsor is, of course, how could we forget, NFG Vets. NFG Vets is owned and operated by a team of veterans whose sole purpose is to provide active duty and veteran communities a place to be themselves without judgment from anyone. And, of course, they welcome all service members from all over the world. So head over and check those guys out on Facebook. That's NFG Vets and, of course, K-Bar Soap Company. And when we come back, we'll continue on with Joaquin Watai and his wood-turning adventures. But we'll go take a break, and we'll be right back, folks.
Radio. The holiday season isn't always about physical gifts. Sometimes it is more than that. So during this holiday season, give to dvfarm.org. The DV Farm in Gilsum, New Hampshire is dedicated to helping addicted and homeless veterans get their lives back on track. Help them and let them know that they have a purpose and they are not alone. They watched your six when they volunteered. Now you can watch their six. Give to dvfarm.org today.
DV Radio is for you, the veteran, active duty service member, caregiver, and civilian supporter of the military. DVRadio.net is the online veteran network made for and by veterans. From original shows to syndication, you can find it here on DVRadio.net. In an effort to continue our mission and make better quality shows for each and every one of you, visit our Patreon at patreon.com/DVRadio. Whether you can only pledge $1 per month or that entire $1 million inheritance your uncle left you, there's a tier with rewards waiting for you. So why not keep DV Radio running and get rewarded at the same time? Head to patreon.com/DVRadio now. That's patreon.com/DVRadio.
Radio.
Nothing interesting on TV? That's why you're listening to DVRadio.net WDVR.
This ain't reality TV!
It's all there, black and white, clear as crystal!
It was at this moment that he knew he fucked up.
Oh, rude. Well, isn't that special?
Bloody, don't you think you should rephrase that?
Mama said that.
Good day, sir!
Now class is dismissed, gentlemen.
All right, folks, welcome back to Frag Out, Drag Out. With us still is our co-host at large, Uncle Fester, and my frozen brother from another mother, Frosty, and this week's special guest, Mr. Joaquin Watai. And, of course, our lovely Miss Nevermore. Her beak is tweaked, and she is once again down for the count, but she shall be returning. Never fear, never doubt. So, Frosty, there, you said you had some questions there, a couple more questions there for Mr. Joaquin Lathai.
Yeah, I'm just curious as to what are some of your favorite woods to turn, and where are some of the places that you've acquired some of your materials?
Well, when I started, like I said, you know, I traded Bob for the lathe, and he sent me home with his lathe and a box of chunks of wood. And that was great. I turned through those in about 2 weeks, and I started looking for. I was just going nuts. I had a very old dining table that was in the house when we rented it, and the landlord said, "Burn it. I don't care." So I cut up the legs, and I was turning the legs of the table, which was actually kind of cool, and I learned a lot just doing that, just messing around with chunks of random wood. But it wasn't enough. I didn't have enough wood, and I didn't have the kind of wood that I wanted to use so that I could turn the natural edges and things like that.
Yeah, story of Frosty's life. We understand.
Yeah. enough wood.
Never enough wood.
Well, if you're needing wood, I do have a pile that you're more than welcome to.
So it sounds like the snowman wants to be plowed. Anyway. Oh, hey. Anyway, so I'm
forgetting blowed.
We went there, folks. That's right.
It wouldn't be frag out, drag out if we didn't talk about plowing and blowing.
And wood.
So, I don't know if you guys remember, but June, I tore my right bicep, pretty bad injury, and I was driving to the doctor's for one of the pre-op appointments, and I noticed that there was a bunch of six or seven foot long logs in the yard of a house up the road. Well, I was on my way to my appointment, so I was kind of going, well, I hope nobody else sees that. And on the way back, I'm driving, and I wasn't quite sure where the house was. I just remember what road it was. And I come around the corner, and there's the wood. And I'm like, you know, slamming the brakes, jump into the driveway, hop out of my truck. And this poor lady, you know, older lady in her 60s with this little dog on a leash, is like, her eyes are real big. And I said, "Hi, ma'am. I'm sorry to bother you, but I noticed you got a tree down in the yard, and I'm a wood turner, and I was wondering if I might be able to have some of that wood." And she said, "Oh yeah, take all you want. Do you want some help?" And I said, "No, ma'am, I get it." So I'm wrestling these logs, one-armed, because my right arm is in a sling, and throwing them into the back of the truck. And I get home, and I couldn't do anything with it because my arm was in a sling. But and I got the neighbor to help me unload it. And I'm like, "Oh, I can't wait to start getting into it." Well, once the doctor cleared me to start turning again, I started cutting this stuff up, and I discovered it was spalted maple. Spalted maple is very much prized in woodworking circles because it is spalting is a fungus that is killing the tree. And it creates all these wonderful patterns and dark lines and swirls and things as the fungus invades the grain. And so I discovered that I had just out of the corner of my eye seen and obtained a veritable cornucopia of highly figured spalted maple. And that was just a treat. I turned a couple of very in my opinion, incredibly beautiful yarn bowls out of it. One was for my mother, who had been bugging me since I started turning to make something for her. And then I still have available. The wood is just stunningly beautiful and really a treat to turn. I kind of came across the large amount of cherry wood I have the same way. It's all crotch pieces, and a tree service, a guy that runs a tree service, was giving it away because what he usually does is splits and dries wood that he cuts and sells it as firewood. Well, because the grain, like I explained earlier, the grain goes in all different directions. When you put it in a hydraulic splitter, it explodes because it can't split straight. The grain's not straight. That's terrible for firewood, but it's amazing when you put it on a lathe. And then I have, so what I've been doing is watching Craigslist and watching Facebook market. And every time somebody advertised wood, come get this, you know, free wood, free firewood, get it, you know, come get it. I try and go grab some. I've got some oak, me and oak. I'm still learning oak. Oak is a challenge. Me and oak, we have a,
love hate relationship.
Beautiful. Oak is beautiful wood, but boy, it pisses me off. Because you think you've got a piece of dry oak, and remember, now I'm dealing with a lot of humidity in North Carolina. I don't remember a day that it's been less than 45 or 50% humidity, and most often it's 65 to 100%. So when you think you have a piece of wood dry, then you calculate the relative humidity, and it's not dry. And then when you turn it, and I mean, these are chunks of wood that have been sitting for years. But when you turn it and start peeling away the outer layers, the middle part, the stuff that you're cutting into, is still wet. So you get this nice piece that, you know, this bowl or whatever, and it's nice and you think it's pretty, and it's, you sand it and you finish it and you set it aside to let the finish cure. And 3 days later, it's oval shaped, and oak is the worst. Me and oak. Yeah. I love the wood, but I have to find a source of dry. Like I need to break down and buy kiln dried oak if I'm going to turn it.
Crap. I saw like an easy bake oven type thing where they put the wood inside that to let it to dry it out.
What I'm doing with the cherry piece that I'm working on right now is I turned it rough so that it's an inch thick all around, and I'm microwaving it. To drive the moisture out of it. You can use a humidifier, a dehumidifier, like a food dryer. The thing that I've discovered because I keep looking, how can I dry the wood? How can I dry the wood? Desiccant, blue silica gel, desiccant. Like you know, when you buy a new pair of shoes, there's those little packets of the beads.
Yep.
They sell, you know, two gallons, 5 gallons, 7 gallons of water of desiccant. And if you can take a piece that's rough turned to an inch thick, bury it in the desiccant for 24 to 48 hours and pull it out, and it's less than 10% moisture, which is...
Wouldn't rice work the same way?
No, rice doesn't. Rice breaks down, gets sludgy, and finds its way into the...
piece, okay.
Yeah, into the grain. But the other thing is with the desiccant, it changes color as it draws more moisture out, and the desiccant itself gets wetter, it changes color. So once the blue turns to whatever, I think it's orange, the indicator color, right? The piece of wood is dry, put that on a lathe, finish it, take the desiccant, put it in those tinfoil turkey trays, throw it in your oven for 3 or 4 hours at the lowest setting, and it dries out all the moisture and resets the desiccant. Where rice, you can use it once and it's ruined. You can use desiccant over and over and over again. So that's another tool that I want to try and obtain, because I like turning the greener wood. I like finding a log and saying, I wonder what's inside that, and sticking it on the lathe and finding out. The problem is, because it's green, it's wet, I can't necessarily finish it, or if I do finish it, the finish gets ruined or it warps. So if I have a way to dry it, if I have a way to rough turn it, dry it, put it back on the lathe, see, then that's where that chuck would come back in to play, put it back on the lathe, and then finish, turn it, sand it, and you know, finish turning the shape, sand it, and then put finish on it, and it won't warp, then I'm able to create exactly what I saw when I started turning a piece from that piece of wood.
Is the damprid, is that basically the same thing?
Damprid is chemically different than the silica gel desiccant. I'm not sure how, but there is a difference. The thing about the silica gel is it doesn't, it because it removes moisture, it doesn't transfer any chemicals to the wood. Plus, you're going to end up turning away every surface that it touched anyway. So it's actually the safest way to dry it that doesn't involve electricity. I mean, I could go buy a $150 dehydrator, but then it costs me to plug it in and run it, you know, whereas if I have a bucket of desiccant that I can use over and over and over and over and over and over again, and all I have to do is dry it every, you know, once a week, what a big difference, you know. Unfortunately, this is not a hobby that's cheap.
It's like most, like most. Like I said, we were talking about during the break, you know, I've dealt more with metals and you know, mechanical type stuff, you know, working with my hands that way. And I've always found it somewhat easier. If I mess up like on a weld, you know, and I added something or took too much away, I can always fill that back in with, you know, more weld, do a little grinding, do a little sanding, and I'm back in there again. If I make a wrong cut on a piece of wood, you know, like you measured wrong, the old saying, measure twice, cut once. Yeah.
Measure twice, cuss once.
Yeah, pretty much. I've always found it easier sticking with stuff that I can fill in and kind of cover up my mistakes. Not as easy to do with working with
wood. Yeah, you can't put wood back.
No.
It's off of the piece, it's off of the pieces.
You mentioned your love-hate relationship with oak there. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you've either tried turning or have no desire to even try turning at all?
I mean, like, oak is beautiful. Don't get me wrong. It's incredibly lovely wood. And when I successfully turn oak, like my profile picture on the Facebook page, that's a piece of oak. When it comes out right, it's amazing. It's getting it to come out right. And moisture right now is my biggest enemy. Here's something I don't want to turn. As much as I appreciate the guys that do the resin pours and turn the resin bowls like Pole Barn Productions and Nick Cimetti, watching them is fascinating, and the work that they do is beautiful. But I'm not interested in putting plastic on my wood. I want what I make to be natural. I want to see the grain and not resin. There is a place for resin. There are some things that I might make that I might use resin, but you're not going to see me, you know, taking this chunk of burl, pouring, you know, 13 ounces of resin on it, throwing it in a pressure pot and then turning. It's just not something. Yes, these people create beautiful objects.
And resin's extremely expensive.
Yeah, resin's expensive. And that's a place where the carbide tools are far more useful is resin. But it's just, you know, if I can make something just as beautiful, just as functional, just as finely finished out of wood, I'd rather do it out of wood. I like that natural. You got natural and you got plastic. Just like women, if I pick up a bowl, I want it to be natural, not plastic.
So far, no woods that you don't like.
So far, I've heard story. Cherries. I love cherry. It's beautiful. My shop smells like maraschino cherries when I turn this cherry wood. It's gorgeous, but holy crap, is it fickle! Cherry is notorious for cracking, especially the crotch wood, because all the energy is going in different directions with the different directions the grain go. This stuff is so finicky. It will crack and pieces will just chip and fly off randomly, seemingly randomly. But then when you look at the directions of the grain and where, how you're cutting and what you're doing, oh, but at the same time, cherry provides me with a challenge because I have to figure out how to use the tools artfully enough to work around the stress in the wood and draw out the piece. So it makes me
what you said about the working in the moment.
Yeah, it forces me to focus harder, and I feel like the more time I pour into focusing on a piece of wood, the more beautiful the product, the end product.
You know, and what's the worst case scenario? You use the piece that you were trying to turn into some, you know, smoking material for your.
Well, that's exactly it. I told the guy when I picked up the cherry, everything that didn't end up on the lathe was going in the smoker. Cherry's one of my favorite woods to smoke with.
Oh, shoot. And some of the things I've seen on your page, too, where you're using two different types of woods, like the maple and mahogany acorn box. You know, yeah. There's just some, you know, some pieces that obviously sets them off and then it works with well.
Yeah, that mahogany, actually was 50-year-old boards that Bob gave me that just laying around in his shop. He hadn't used them for years. And I mean, they were old chunks of mahogany. They were rough sawn. They couldn't have been drier. Let me tell you, that stuff is a dream to turn. Mahogany turns really well. So does walnut. Walnut's a wonderful, man, is walnut fun to turn, dry or green. Walnut's a blast to turn. There's a wood I've turned called Chechen. I bought my pieces of Chechen at a local hardwood place. Chechen smells like green olives when you turn it. It's really weird. Chechen also dry. Chechen draws so much moisture out of the air that when you're turning it and the heat is involved, it starts sucking moisture in and the shavings are wet, even though the piece of wood is at 9% or 8% humidity. It's Chechen is a very strange wood. It's also called Mexican poison wood. Thank God, you know, wood finishes polymerize and make it safe, but yeah. But you know what? I've been able to create a couple, some things that I felt were really unique and beautiful. My sister is a tattoo artist, and I was able to turn a inkwell out of a piece of the cherry, and it held together, and it was dry enough. And I made this fantastical inkwell with a walnut insert to close the bottom. I finished it inside and out, so it's actually functional, and then a mahogany plug. And the top, like an old-fashioned inkwell, but it's all turned out of wood, and it's functional. It's completely functional. And the lady who runs the antique shop across the street from my sister's tattoo shop in Roseburg, Oregon, offered her $300 immediately for the inkwell, and she said, "No, it's mine." You know, so it's but see, I had so much fun making. Figuring out, here's the other cool thing about especially making closed objects like boxes or lidded boxes or urns and things like that is making everything fit and match and figuring out how to solve the problems. I don't have a chuck. So how do I solve the problem of turning the inside of a inkwell hollow and finishing it, then flipping it around and turning the outside when I don't have a way to hold it? So I had to be very careful how I designed that chuck. And what I did was turned it hollow, then turned a mortise on the inside edge straight, turned a tenon on a waist block and stuck it on the tenon, then turned the outside, then measured very carefully and turned the walnut to plug the bottom, finished that and just glued it in. And then the lid was simple, turned between centers, just spindle turning. The lid was very simple. Just figuring out the steps to put it all together, to figure out how to make this vessel work. That was awesome. It took me a week to turn this piece. It took every day at least 2 or 3 hours, which, you know, on top of dealing with my physical disability, with my back, that's not easy. But I was so fascinated with trying to solve the puzzle of creating the inkwell that I didn't feel pain while I was out working. When I got in the house and sat down, you know, to get a drink of water or something, all of a sudden it was like, oh crap. You know, holy shit, I can barely move. But during the time while I was turning and I was so focused, I didn't feel a thing. And that's, you know what, you want to talk about a quality of life thing? Doing an activity where you're so focused that you don't remember that you hurt, that's awesome.
Most definitely. Now, since this is, you know, frag out, drag out, if you had one frag out to mention about wood turning, what would that be?
I absolutely do. Here's my frag out.
Frag out.
Look, there are people who turn production and they crank out, you know, 100 shot glasses in 3 or 4 days. And there's a time and a place for that, and it's great those guys can do that. And when they're doing something like cranking out 100 shot glasses in 3 or 4 days, they can afford to charge $2.50 a shot glass. because they cranked out 100 of them. However, people like me, like Phil Anderson, Pole Barn Productions, Sam Angelo, people who do not create the same thing over and over, but who are creating unique pieces every time they touch the lathe, you've got to understand that what might take a production turner 25 minutes to do, because they're turning 100 of them and it becomes rote, takes an art turner or a hobby turner or whatever you would like to call us, hours, sometimes days. I'm working on the fifth or sixth day of working on this piece, this cherry piece I'm working on. And it's unique, it's individual art. A lot of us pour a lot of our hearts and souls into it. And you take it to a market, you know, a craft market, and people want to spend $20 on a bowl.
Yep. It's not a garage sale, people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can go to Hobby Lobby and buy $20 turned bowls. Guess where they were made? Southeast Asia, in a sweatshop, probably by children. Okay. Yeah. You can go buy the same yarn bowl that I make, same size, at Hobby Lobby for $35, $45. But the guy who made it made 50 of them that day and got paid $2.25. Or you can support an artist who makes every piece unique and approaches every piece as unique and takes pride in everything that comes off of their lathe, or they wouldn't sell it. And there are pieces that I won't sell. It's just not something that I feel is marketable. But there are pieces that are very marketable that took a lot of work, especially with the technological challenges I have of the small size of my lathe, missing certain tools like a chuck. And so, you know, if I had a chuck, my prices would be lower because it would be faster and easier for me to turn things. But when I have to use friction and glue every time I want to make something, it makes things take longer. I'm not complaining about that. I'm explaining that prices aren't cheap when you're working with an artist. And there are artists out there who are far superior to me, and people still want to say, well, I'll give you $30 and that bowl's worth $300 or $400 easily.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I think everybody else here said it too. I mean, with the pictures we've seen on there, a lot of the stuff that you're producing, brother, is immaculate. It's beautiful. Obviously we can tell, the pride and stuff that you put into it. So, it's definitely not that cheap mass produced, you know, yarn bowl that you're going to find in the old Hobby Lobby. We can guarantee you that.
Yeah. And I mean, the yarn bowl that I still have right now, it's huge. It's seven inches across by 5 inches deep. And part of the process when I make a yarn bowl, I do some unique things, like the bottom's thick so that it's heavy, so that if there is a knot, as the person's trying to pull the yarn through while they're crocheting or knitting, they're not going to knock the bowl over and have the yarn roll across the floor. So I thought about that when I designed the bowl. Well, let's make sure the bottom's heavy. Let's make sure the bottom's heavy so that the bowl doesn't tip over. Unique, purposeful things go into designs when small artists create them. And that's something that gets lost when, you know, you're walking through a craft market and you want to spend $35 and no more.
That's something I think that all your little inclusions or imperfections actually add to them, and you've kind of accentuated them to where they stand out and are really kind of artistic touch to it. That you, I don't know if you notice it, but I've been looking at all of these. One of them that really caught my eye is you've got a cherry acorn box. Mm-hmm. It's got a little, I'm not sure whether it's a crack or a
bark inclusion.
Bark inclusion.
Yeah.
That it actually makes it look more like an acorn than the other ones, a couple of the others that are kind of clean with without any of that. It really looks, they kind of add to everything.
That's exactly what I try to do, is I want to accentuate the unusual features of the wood. I absolutely, if there's a branch coming through the middle of the piece, I want to make sure that you see that branch. If there's one piece that I think that stands out really well is the monolithic box that I made. which I actually did sell. The thing that I love about that cherry monolithic box is you've got this wonderful, shiny, smoothly sanded cube with all these stress fractures in it. So when you look at it from afar, it's like, oh, wow, look at that. Look how clean that is. And you get close and you see the fractures and the cracks and you go, well, that is not what I thought it was. And in my mind, I compare that box a lot. I might, you know, I'm going to have to make another one because I almost didn't want to sell it, but I did sell it to another person who is a PTSD survivor and could appreciate what we look on like on the outside, right? Is we're squared away and we're shiny. And then when you get closer, you start seeing the cracks and the inclusions. But overall, you still have this beautiful form and this gorgeous finish. And so I guess I kind of relate the design of the box and the creation that I made with the box to PTSD and how in spite of the cracks and the fractures and the crevices, we can still be beautiful.
It gives each of your pieces a personality.
Yeah. Well, and I think another feature I love about that box is it's a cube. It is almost a perfect cube as I could make. The hollow part is as close to as perfect of a half a sphere as I could make. And that ain't easy. It took me some serious problem solving. You see the pictures and the progress where I wrapped it in painter's tape, masking tape, before I glued it to the waste block so that I didn't screw up the finish while I turned the inside. That was really harrowing. That was nerve-wracking because I spent a lot of time and put a lot of effort into making that cube shiny and smooth. And then putting it on the lathe and spinning it at 800 RPM, trusting hot glue and masking tape, I was terrified. And it worked, and I couldn't have been happier. I'm going to have to make something else like it. I'm probably going to try to find some walnut because I like the dark shape colors and grain of walnut. But yeah, that box I was extremely proud of, and I was thrilled to be able to sell it. So yep. And that's just, you know, again, everything, the lady who bought it is a friend and she's a delight and she appreciated that it was a piece of art. And that's just it is look, there is a place where you can get $20 turned bowls. And a lot of them were turned, like I said, Southeast Asia in a sweatshop. And then you can come to a local artist who puts passion into his work and you're going to pay more.
Heart and soul.
Think about what you're buying.
Yep. Well, I definitely think that that frag out is something that, you know, is something that we can sit here at looking at your photos and stuff can agree with you on and most definitely can feel where you're coming from, brother. Can definitely feel where you're coming from.
I appreciate the comments. I feel like I'm a hack. So
these things are gorgeous.
And obviously you can tell from, you know, day one to some of the newer stuff, like you said, even the box you just finished up with the cherry there, it's you're definitely improving on the skills and it's like I said, the pieces themselves, while not perfect, they have their imperfections. Hey, they're just like some of us dysfunctional veterans. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. We may be rough and tough on the outside, but then the core, we have a heart of gold. So I think,
well, that's my whole point in using, that's why I don't like resin. Wood has imperfections in it, but you can make something perfectly beautiful that includes the imperfections. If you just fill it all with plastic and so that it can be shiny, well, you're missing the point. You're missing the beauty.
Most definitely. I mean, hell, I could probably look like $1 million too with a ton of plastic surgery. Make my little side business there off of Spinard Avenue a little more beautiful, you know what I'm saying?
Get that Hellraiser mattress out.
Oh, shoot, fellas. Well, I tell you what, I think we did a great job. You know, like I said, best of wishes to our sister Nevermore there, and hopefully she's getting to feel better so she can join us again on Frag Out, Drag Out. So I'm going to tell you what, let's go with some closing thoughts here. Frosty, what's your closing thought for the week?
Well, for this holiday season, think about going to your little veteran personal businesses or your artisans or craftsmen in your local area and getting some of their projects or artwork for your gifts. Support your local artisans and share their work.
Exactly. Uncle Fester, what you got for us this week?
Well, definitely, hopefully everyone enjoyed their holidays. And of course, be careful as you go on about the holiday season and you're brave enough to go shopping. Good luck out there.
Most definitely. And our special guest this week, Mr. Joaquin Watai. Closing thoughts for you, sir.
Well, just if anybody who's listening is interested in any woodwork, check out my page, Watai, W-A-H-T-I-E, Wood Turning on Facebook. We talked a lot about tools that I don't have that I can use. I actually put a Amazon wish list together, and it's on the page, and I will trade you woodworking for tools. I will make you pieces and trade you for tools. So that's a way you could possibly buy some original artwork, and I can get the tools I need to make more. So hopefully somebody sees that and thinks it's an equitable trade. I'm more than willing to do it. And when I say custom, I mean you tell me, well, you know, I'd like a chalice. I'll make you a chalice. Can't guarantee what wood it'll be. I'll have to find something dry, so I'll probably have to buy it. But if that's what you want and you want to trade tools for it, then you know what? By cracky, we'll make you a chalice.
Alrighty, brother. Well, like I said, I think you're doing it right. I think you've got it to where you're still perfecting, but those imperfections that are in the wood reminds me a lot of us veterans. You know, like I said, rough and tough on the outside, but we all have a heart of gold, or at least most of us have a heart of gold. All right, Fucksicles, for this week's Frag Out Drag Out, again, special guest who is Joaquin Watai. With us, as always, is Frosty, and of course, Uncle Fester, and for myself, DB Yoink. Thanks again, and until next week, Fucksicles.
Bye-bye.
Boner wood popping out.
DB Radio.